Listening Dog Media.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Offside Rule, where we meet once again every week to dissect the weird and wonderful goings-on from the game we all love, with a bit of behind-the-scenes action for you as well. I'm Kate Borsay, and for the second week in a row, we can call upon our first-choice lineup here on the Offside Rule, with the flair and tenacity provided by Sky Sports star Hayley McQueen. Hello, Hayley.
Oh, thanks. I love that. I love that. Are we like Chelsea's back three right now as three?
Maybe people can send those opinions in on the back of a postcard later. And adding non-stop energy up and down the wings, or the country, of course. We've got the versatile and tenacious, possibly illegally parked, Lindsay Hooper.
I don't know about Chelsea's back three, Hayley. Didn't they let in three goals against Leeds at the weekend?
They did, yeah. That was my point.
Very high opinions of ourselves here on the show. How has everyone been? Lindsay, we should explain that you're parked up somewhere in Wilmslow. What are you up to?
I'm doing one of my magical mystery tours again. So, of course, I'm in a car park and people looking at me with a raised eyebrow, with my microphone on my lap, my laptop here. What's she doing? I'm actually in the Northwest.
It's the police tapping someone's phone. Yeah.
It's all of the broadcast days this week for the WSL and the start of the new season. So I'm up here living out of a hotel. I feel very Pep Guardiola. Maybe not the same sort of hotel, though.
Not with all the add-ons.
No, not with all the add-ons. And I'm certainly not at the Lowry. But I am up here. I did Manchester United yesterday. On Monday, we were at Liverpool. Tomorrow, Manchester City. And then I drive back down and the hotel stay continues because it's a very early start on Friday. So I've got to stay just outside Arsenal to speak to Arsenal women on Friday. So, yeah, it's one of those weeks, Kate, where I just not really touching the floor.
Best experience at a club so far this week? Was it exciting at Liverpool? I'd imagine it is.
Not for the men's team, obviously. They did their broadcast day at Anfield, so that was nice. And I got to see the development of the new stand that they're putting up. Last week was one of my highlights because Hannah Hampton let me wear her Euro medal.
Oh, yes.
So I've got a picture with the Euro medal. And then I don't know about highlight, Kate, because you know that we're very fond of Jill Scott and Ellen White and their announcements. I got a lot of the Lionesses yesterday at Manchester United to react to the Ellen White news, and then Jill followed later when I got back to the hotel of them both retiring. And it just feels like a monumental week where two really big players from the women's game have decided to call time on their careers. So I know that that's kept you busy as well in studio, Hayley.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So I was on air when the news broke and I started to read the statement from Jill Scott, which was on the Players Tribune, before I realised it would probably take up that whole hour and the following hour. It was her life story from beginning to end. I didn't actually have chance to digest it and read it before I started. So I just kind of cut off. I was like, And this continues if you go and have a read yourself on her social media. And then I just kept talking and talking and talking and talking about the club she played for, the awards she's won, all the major tournaments she's played in her Olympic, you know, adventures as well. I was like, oh God, I am going to be here for quite some time. And we were hoping to get a bit of reaction to it to throw in, but it was just me waffling on for quite some time. But yeah, it was such a huge, huge story in the studio. And I felt a bit emotional about it. I felt a bit sad, like the end of an era, but really actually quite exciting because it's the start of a whole new one, isn't it? She's paved the way for a lot of these women coming through now. And she's one of those real characters of the game. You think, oh, I just hope we still get those. I hope we still get those. And the fact that she came from such humble, you know, beginnings, and she'd, you know, she was studying while still trying to play, and she was working whilst playing professionally as well. That doesn't happen now. And you just hope that we've still got that type of character in the game to come.
Yeah, sure. She's a really important reminder, Jill, and Ellen White too, of players who've straddled with their career from kind of, you know, amateur to part-time to full-time playing. Perhaps Jill will be back at her coffee shop in Withenshaw, box-to-box coffee. If anyone's local, do keep Jill Scott going, please, in retirement. Apparently the coffee is fantastic as well. She owns it with her partner, Shelley Unit. I'm yet to go. But I think we should all try and make a visit if we can.
Flat whites all round.
Hey! Don't forget you can subscribe via your favourite podcasting app to The Offside Rule in our 10th anniversary year. You can also follow us on Twitter at Offside Rule Pod, and do check out the website offsiderulepodcast.com. Some fantastic pieces up there. And I'll maybe give a few of those a bit of a plug later on. Coming up on the show then, we'll talk all things EFL. What are the storylines you simply can't afford to miss this season from the Championship, League One and League Two? And after a flying start to the season, which sees their side top of the table, Arsenal fans, well, they're riding high right now, aren't they? In part two of the show, we'll discuss whether they can now be considered the best side in London. This is an early call from producer Doogie. We'll break it down a bit later. But first, with deadline day looming, we're going to try and make some predictions about which side is going to be the busiest, which ones are going to make a last minute flurry for some signings, who's going to be absolutely desperate to mop up maybe after losing a player or two. It is traditionally one of the most crazy mental days in the English football calendar, so we'll get ahead of it here on the show.
Deadline day. Deadline day.
All right, transfer deadline day then, just 8 days away, which means that clubs all across the world frantically making plans, calling agents, conducting deals, leaking stories as we speak. But as we know, Lindsay and Hayley, the best laid recruitment strategy can often go out the window, can't it, on deadline day, where simply clubs can get desperate. Today, we want to make some predictions about the craziness that will inevitably unfold. And there are, of course, particular clubs who are looking to do quite a bit of business. Should we start, Lindsay, with Manchester United? Because that's probably the club who we can identify as definitely wanting to do more business.
Yeah, and possibly we could enter into that desperate bracket, couldn't we? I think given the opening to the season, apart from that brilliant result they had against Liverpool, it hasn't been much to write home about. I think Ten Hag has realised the scale of the job in front of him. And so we've heard names linked all over the place. In fact, I can't imagine there's been a shift, Hayley, where you've not mentioned Manchester United being linked with a player in the last week, because they were linked with 25 different names. Amongst those, João Felix, Thomas Meunier, Vardy at one point, Jamie Vardy, Aubameyang, Pulisic, Ziyech, bizarrely as well, they had that link with Begovic. I think maybe a goalkeeper wouldn't be a bad idea. And this is part of the issue, I think, with Manchester United at the moment and the money that they want to spend is, do they spend it wisely? Frankie de Jong, there's a lot still rumbling on there, because since bringing in Casemiro, suddenly that deal looks like it could still have legs. Now, of course, they're very different players, Casemiro and de Jong, but do you need both? When I'd argue maybe that they, certainly from a goalkeeping point of view, I think they need someone ready to take over from David De Gea at some point, certainly to be that next big Manchester United number one. I think they had him there, but he's left, and now maybe they need another. In terms of strikers, you know, if Ronaldo, as we believe, is going to make a statement in a couple of weeks, and that would indicate that's when the transfer window's closed. So I would be very surprised if he's still at Manchester United.
And you do wonder, don't you, Linz, if he's going to make that statement as a Man United player, or will he just be making the same statement, but he'll be playing for another club? Who knows?
I know. I think it might be another club. Why would you wait for 2 weeks? Why would you say that 2 weeks, knowing that the transfer window's closed, as if something has been sewn up, something's been done, and then he's going to speak about potentially why he's moved on? That would be my theory. A right back as well. And those are my issues with Manchester United at the moment, is that we know they have money, we know that they're willing to spend it, but are they going to spend it in the right places? For you, Hayley, you've been linked with Gakpo from PSV, a player that, of course, Ten Hag will know well. Ajax as well, and Anthony, how are we going with it? Are you excited about either of those prospects?
Cody Gakpo, I think that could be a good one, because at least he's young. I was a bit narked off with the whole Casemiro situation, but actually seeing him pre-match in the Monday Night Football, I was actually quite excited. He just looked so happy to be there. And I thought, can it really be that bad? Because he knows Rafael Varane quite well, you'd have to think, and other contacts.
Oh, apparently
at Real Madrid.
Varane convinced him to go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Cristiano Ronaldo. If it was that bad and they thought the future was looking so bleak, they wouldn't have told him to come, would they? I mean, of course, the agent would probably overrule absolutely any bit of opinion or advice from any other player. However, I think that's quite an exciting name to have in, especially if you're going to lose Ronaldo, and especially if he's not going to be playing Harry Maguire much. You're going to need these experienced heads in there when he's maybe going to have to rely on some of the younger players. But Cody Gakpo, I think, great, get him in. I think they have agreed personal terms, if I'm not wrong, but that could be something that is wrapped up maybe towards the end of the window. Let's hope it's not just on deadline day and we're still waiting till then, because I don't know if I could cope. The one issue I'm having with United is I think the reason they're being linked with a lot of these players is agents are using United as leverage. I know for a fact that Jamie Vardy and Manchester United was never going to be a thing. United were not interested in signing Jamie Vardy. But according to his agent and people that he knows, they just use that to get him a new deal at Leicester. And guess what? He was linked with United. Ta-da! He gets given a new long-term deal at Leicester. And I think the same with the Aubameyang as well. It was like, you know, almost using that for him to make sure that he does go to Chelsea and that they sign him. So I just think it's a little bit of game playing here. And it's a sad state of affairs that Manchester United are being used in this way. But yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit crazy for United towards the end of the transfer window. I think we're going to see some big outs and some surprise deals done here as well.
Are we going to see some big money, Hayley? Are we going to go 80 million plus on deadline day for someone?
I think they might have to, just to kind of placate the fans as well. We saw as well, didn't they, with the protest. I just don't know who it could be. I just think there's going to be a name completely out of nowhere that hasn't been linked yet that they're suddenly just going to sign. And Erik ten Hag, wanted this player for many, many, many months. But really, it's just been many, many, many minutes once he knows Ronaldo's definitely on his way out of the door.
You've mentioned him briefly, but one player that wouldn't be a surprise, but that United are understood to be very interested in, is Ajax's Anthony. Apparently, Ajax won 84 million quid, 100 million euros for him, and United have only bid just under 68 million. But again, financial planning, how you work the market, how you get the best of these transfer windows. Apparently Ajax say that they would have accepted 67 million when the window opened. So in other words, if United had come in early, then they may have got their man. Another team who are going to have to make sure that they plan this right are another side that we know need players and are very interested in signings, and that's Chelsea. They've obviously made some big money splashes already with Raheem Sterling and Mark Cucurella at left back as well. Today, so we're recording this on Wednesday, we understand that Anthony Gordon, the Everton player, has told Frank Lampard that he wants to join Chelsea. He's put that statement of intent out there. We know the clubs are already holding talks over a £60 million deal. So if Everton agree, if they get the right price, then that one could go ahead. One that's not going ahead for now for Chelsea, but could well do, is this chase over Wesley Fofana, the Leicester City defender. I think Chelsea have had, a third bid rejected so far. We know that Tuchel's really keen on Fofana, number one target really in terms of the defence. There are more talks going on, so I guess it's just whether there'll be a price agreed. And Leicester, as far as I know, have been seeking in excess of 80 million quid for Fofana. I don't know what you girls think about that price, but, you know, Tuchel's really intent on getting him. And of course, he's not been playing for Leicester, has he?
I think it leads to an honorary mention for Leicester in this topic as well, because I think their recruitment has been really poor over the last couple of years. I think about Vestergaard going in, and I don't know. I just think some of the business that's been done there is that's probably the reason that no moves have happened. I'm not sure whether there's
who are you blaming for that, from that.
I think it has to be Brendan Rodgers. You know, the book does stop with him. I'm sure he's got a recruitment team, but he's got to approve those moves. And then I'm thinking, on deadline day, do they get this 80 million that they're asking for Fofana, and then they blow it on someone like Jan Bednarak from Southampton? That's what I wouldn't put past them at the minute.
So you think they're going to go rogue. In terms of Wesley Fofana, I thought it was interesting because Brendan Rodgers was quite cutting about him. So really, some sort of deal's got to be made. Brendan Rodgers saying last night that he didn't turn up for training one day last week. You need full commitment from players. They are well paid. And the very least you can do is turn up. So we know he is not happy at all. Another player, of course, being heavily linked to Chelsea is Aubameyang. How do we feel about this deal? He's lost his place at Barca, hasn't he, to Robert Lewandowski. Does it make sense to you, Hayley Lindsay?
I think he's coming back to a league that he knows very, very well. I think he's going to have to be on his best behaviour, but I think he will. I think he probably knows, you know, the way it worked out at the end of Arsenal. He's still got one last big contract in him, hasn't he? And he probably knows that this will be last chance saloon for him to make his mark. And I think he's a very lucky boy if Chelsea come in for him, to be honest. I think he should think himself lucky because of what's happened before.
Chelsea need a striker, so from that point of view, I think it's a good fit. What you don't do with Aubameyang, and I think that's been proven certainly in his time at Arsenal, is you don't give him a big chunky contract. I think if you give him, as Chelsea, if you give him a year, he will prove himself. I think it could be really savvy business. I wouldn't even give him two. I think he's that sort of player that when he gets comfortable, a little bit like players previously, like Adebayor and people like that, they just go
big. It's like an Adebayorism. Yeah. Only give them a short contract. I mean, he's been solid for Barcelona, but just no longer needed there. His wages have gone down as well at Barca. Can he be lured to Chelsea with a bigger pay deal, or is that just to be expected as the player gets older? They're worth less in money. Certainly a strong prospect for Arsenal as well. Linz, who else have you been looking at, or which club have you been looking to for someone who might try and get the best out of deadline day?
I've just got a couple of quick mentions. I'm perfectly happy for Willy Bolly, I think, from a Wolves perspective, to go to Forest. So if they want to take another player off us, they can go ahead. He's only got 1 year left on his contract. I feel with Bolly, he's been a brilliant defender for us, certainly alongside Cody. That's going to be, you know, going down in our history as a great partnership. But I do think he's past his best. So I think that Bolly, for him to go, that would be fine. Everton were linked with Adama Traore. And did you see the goal that he scored in the Carabao Cup yesterday against Preston? Beautiful volley. I think that added a few million on anyway. but I would really like him to stay. I'd love Adama to stay, to score some of those goals, which we know that he can. It's just been the inconsistency. So that's a couple of deals with my Wolves connections and my Wolves hat on to keep an eye out for. Hayley?
I'm just going to focus a little bit on Newcastle United because I think they are going to make a couple more signings. We know they will because Eddie Howe has already said so, but you just wonder who it's going to be. At the moment, I am loving that they're actually buying young and they're looking to the future. We did think with this big Saudi takeover that they would just be spending huge amounts of money for huge names. I think they've been so clever about things. Unfortunately, they've got Callum Wilson out, so striking options now a little bit lacking. So I think they will have to strengthen. We don't know how long he's going to be out for, but I think they found their man in a player who deserves to be playing in the Premier League, and that is João Pedro, who's obviously at Watford right now. Everton have come in with a bit of a bid. I don't know if that's just going to help Joao Pedro's case for him and his agent as well. But I think in the past, if you were looking at signing for a club, maybe you would have picked Everton over Newcastle United. Not now. Absolutely not. And I think he's only 20 years old. He could learn from players like Wood and from Wilson as well. And I think he could actually come straight into the side and be given a chance from the outset because of the injury situation at Newcastle. He scored 3 goals in 28 Premier League games last season. He's got a lot of untapped potential. That's what people keep talking about, and he's very versatile as well. He can play on the left flank, so that gives Eddie Howe a bit of additional flexibility, I guess, in the final third of the pitch there as well. There are also reports that they're going to pay £30 million for a 21-year-old Borussia Mönchengladbach's Kone. He's been mentioned a lot throughout this window. He plays for France under-21s. He's trying to force his way into the French national team. Is he going to be getting regular football? That's one of the big questions. Some of these moves might not happen if they're just going to be on the bench because we have a major tournament coming up in the winter. And I think that has just kind of thrown this transfer window, not upside down, but it's there are different decisions about playing for clubs and whether you go to clubs to be made this season. And you're not going to take the risk of not getting regular football. He actually only signed for Borussia Mönchengladbach last January. He has played 27 games. He scored 2 goals, just 1 assist. But I think he is someone for the future. And I just like that Newcastle have gone about it in a really clever way, as if they've been planning this for the last few years, like Manchester United should have been. But it's all new. And I think Eddie Howe and Amanda Staveley and everyone there should really be proud of what they're doing.
Do we need to take bets between us, friendly bets, on whether Nottingham Forest are going to sign anyone else at all? Apparently, they want to bring in another 3 players, which would take their total up to 19 new players. Which just sounds, it sounds disastrous. I mean, good luck to them if they manage to get this right. They've spent 133 million quid so far. Only Chelsea have outspent them. And they keep signing players in the same positions. I mean, I don't know whether it's about competition for places or just that they feel that they can afford to try lots of different players out. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me so far. What do you think? More players for Forest, Lindsay?
Well, they're averaging a signing every 3.4 days at the moment.
So by the time this comes out, this podcast...
there should be another one.
Expect to see another one.
At least, yeah.
It is a risky strategy from them, though, isn't it? As in costly. It could be incredibly costly for the club. Have we seen another newly promoted side sign quite so many players in a short space of time? I don't know.
If you're wondering what that noise is in the background, the window cleaner's just turned up with his very tall brush. Can you hear it?
Yeah.
Good job. You've got your clothes on today, isn't
it? I know.
For that one. Okay. Well, let's wrap up the transfer discussions there. Still 8 days to go as we record. So who knows? Maybe we'll have a look at some of those last gasp deals next week. Okay, let's head into part two of this podcast then. I've billed this the Battle of the Capital. I feel like this is worth a voiceover from you. Hayley, can you do us a big,
this is?
Well, this is Lindsay's kind of area, but because she's sat in a car and I don't want to embarrass her, and she's a bit phlegmy today, isn't she, as well, which is nice, everyone. A few coughs away from the microphone. The Battle of the Capital.
Are Arsenal the best side in London? Goodbye to all our Spurs listeners who are probably going to be switching off for about 15 minutes. No, seriously, we will debate this because I think everyone, whether you're pleasantly surprised, shocked, or you can't believe it's going to stay this way, after 3 match weeks of the season, Arsenal are the only Premier League side with a perfect record. Played 3 and won 3. They've scored 9 in the process, only conceded 2. This has meant full-scale hysteria from Arsenal fans who are just not used to being in this position. They're incredibly excited. Fair play to them. But today we want to assess how long this golden ride will continue. Do they have a realistic chance? Let's not talk about winning the league for now, but let's talk about whether Arsenal are going to finish the season as the best side in London. Hayley, you've been doing quite a bit of intensive behind the scenes research, haven't you, courtesy of the TV?
Well, yes, I have started to watch the Arsenal documentary, and I watched it as a Manchester United fan, wanting to have a bit of a laugh at them trying to make their own documentary, thinking it's all going to fall apart because the Tottenham one, I don't know, the Spurs one didn't really do them any favours. I was thinking the Arsenal one's going to be a bit the same and that Arteta might not come across as well as you'd think. Completely the opposite. I'm actually very jealous of what they've got. There is such camaraderie and team spirit, and I actually think the filming of this documentary has brought them together. I'm just about to get to the bit, I'm very behind on this, I'm about to get to the bit with the dossier that Mikel Arteta has put together on Aubameyang, when everyone comes together to kind of agree that he needs to leave the club, and they're very unified in that. But I just can't believe the access that these people get. I just think it's absolutely brilliant. I wish there'd been cameras following Manchester United the last couple of seasons, because that would be blockbuster stuff. But I think the fact that you see them so unified in this documentary, and they've managed to carry that through to the start of the season, I think for once now they are not playing catch up, and they just look a little bit more relaxed, don't they? They actually look like they're going to enjoy this season. Yes, we're only a few games in, but they're in a different position to where they've been in the past. And they've got this game against Manchester United coming up in a few weeks' time, which is at the moment in the Premier League anybody's guess, which is why I think it's been so thrilling, but also why Arsenal have thrilled, because they've got Jesus, who I've got as my captain. They've been galvanised with that as well. They've got a point to prove. It is good, because you're watching this documentary and you're seeing how Arsenal have started this season and doing so well. For once, they're not playing catch up and things are looking positive compared to when they filmed it and everything was kind of crashing down and crumbling around them. And last season, they didn't get off to a best start. They didn't have a great end.
They lost their first three, didn't they, last season? So, they won their first three this season.
In complete contrast. And it's, yeah, I'm loving it so far. I'm sure many of you listeners are nodding in agreement to. I think regardless of whether you're an Arsenal fan or not, just if you're a football fan, please, I urge you to watch it.
Not just listeners, Hayley, nodding along. I'm nodding along. About five episodes in.
What do you think of it?
I really like it. I'm intrigued by Arteta as a coach. We're seeing it now go so well, and I know that it all gets condensed. I did feel it was a little bit, with the whiteboard and the diagrams, a bit primary school teacher.
Yeah, supply teacher.
For a while.
Nothing wrong with old school methods, is there?
But yeah, yeah, I mean, if it's working, and also that is a condensed down version, so I don't think it's a fair reflection. Sometimes, you know, when you just see the picture of the brain and the heart, I do feel that's a bit harsh.
Does anyone get out a laptop at any point?
Yeah, you don't get the whole of the speech, do you? But I really am intrigued as to how he's going to see them get over the line this season, which comes back to the original question, which is, are Arsenal going to be the top London club come the end of the campaign? And that's the unknown factor, isn't it? Is whether that some of these players can get over the line. Last season, they were looking like they were going to get top four, and it just fell away. Everyone forgave that, I think, because of the poor start to the season. But because they've started so well, you've got to try and dissect whether they're equipped to do it. I personally think that the most impressive thing about them compared to Spurs, for instance, and Chelsea, is this new found defence. And it's the partnership of Gabriel and Saliba. I think Zinchenko being added into the mix, knowing that there's competition there with Tierney. I honestly think that they have a really good defence. We've seen already they've not conceded many. And I think if they stay fit, then, because I don't think they're going to concede as many goals as the others, then they've got every chance. I think Spurs have a better attack. And even with Gabriel Jesus now in the mix, I know that Saka, Smith Rowe, Martinelli, they can all score. But there's something about that front three of having Son, Kane. I'm going to put Kulusevski
in there.
Isn't it? Richarlison. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It is basically proven goals. But Jesus is looking so good. We know his pre-season form was brilliant. But yeah, two goals, three assists in the first three games of this season. He's going to be crucial. But maybe you're right in identifying there, Lindsay, a slight concern about where else the goals are going to come from consistently in that side? And is that too, as sort of brilliant a signing as Jesus has been, is that over-reliance on him?
However, you know, Arteta's from the school of Pep, and Pep's never relied on one player to get goals.
True. Yeah.
So that's something that we've got to think about. I just think it could be so close between Arsenal and Spurs this season. It could come down to something like goal difference between the two. Mm. And if it did, I feel that Spurs might have scored more, but then Arsenal may have let less in. So where are we going to be? It's real difficult.
Yeah, and actually Spurs haven't done a great job of scoring yet, have they, really? Son hasn't fired it. Yes, not yet. And that's okay, because they've got enough options there. Let's throw Chelsea into the mix. I mean, I sort of very much feel like Arteta's had the advantage of being able to plan properly. And what we're seeing this season in terms of the signings and what's happening on the pitch is the result of a club putting faith in a manager, putting a long-term project in, and being able to let that manager flourish and the signings come in when it's appropriate, when they're affordable, and everything being executed as it should be, as it makes sense. And I think Chelsea are going to be still playing catch-up to a certain extent, aren't they, this season? As good as their players are, it feels like they don't have the same stability, really, that Arsenal have been able to build over the last season. I don't know whether any of you disagree with that.
My thoughts on Chelsea, and I've said this since the start from predictions for the new season, is that I think they'll finish below Arsenal and Spurs. The linchpins in that side, and I think we saw this in full show in the last match against Leeds, is that without Kante and Kovacic, I think they're in trouble. I think unless they get someone to fill those mighty big football boots when one of them's out, because both of them were out against Leeds, and I thought that the midfield fell apart, certainly in those defensive midfield roles. They weren't breaking up play, there were less turnovers, and that's what Chelsea do. They turn over play, they hit on the break, and they've always been able to do that. But without those two, I don't think Jorginho on his own is enough ample cover. So I think that's the questionable area for Chelsea. And yes, they're without, unless they bring in Aubameyang, they're without an out-and-out striker too. So I don't think they score as many goals as Spurs and Arsenal at the moment. I think you're relying on Sterling and Mason Mount too much there, I think. And, you know, Ziyech and Pulisic, they've never really come to be those 15-plus goals per season strikers. So I don't think they get as many goals as the others. And then I look at the back, and although I think Thiago Silva is fantastic, I'm not sure that they have a defence that matches Arsenal right now either. Mm. So, yeah.
We need to give an honourable mention for Crystal Palace and for West Ham, of course, and also Fulham as well. I mean, I suppose the only real comment to kind of throw into this is that West Ham, you know, a bit like Liverpool, have had a horrible start to the season. Mm-hmm. West Ham have lost three, played three, lost three, scored none, conceded five. And they definitely could have been part of this conversation last season, couldn't they? But for the moment, time's not looking so good at West Ham.
So London-wise, outside of Arsenal, Spurs and Chelsea, best of the rest in London, who do you think is going to top the rest of the group?
Oh, it's so hard, isn't it? Are we going to go for Crystal Palace, or will West Ham find
Palace.
Some form?
Mm. I think Palace this season.
Mm. Do we mention Brentford in this?
Yeah, we need to mention Brentford as well,
we
actually.
Have to.
It's a good shout. Yeah.
I think if Brentford achieve a top 10, that will be an incredible finish. I think realistically, it will be Crystal Palace that will. And I if things keep going the way they are, I can't see David Moyes staying in the job for too much longer.
All bets are off for West Ham, isn't it? We just don't know where that one's going to go. But we can perhaps be a little bit more solid about our predictions for Brentford and certainly for Crystal Palace. All right. So we've sort of reached a consensus, haven't we? Lindsay, you say that you tipped this earlier on in the season. Hayley, do you think Arsenal are going to be the best side in London?
I said Spurs, actually, at the start of the season.
Oh, did you? Okay, sorry.
Yeah. I think we can't go on what we've seen so far.
In other words, too early to tell.
It's too early to tell. But
this is the whole point of the topic.
I know. But having a look at Arsenal, they're actually not doing any better than they did last season. Having a little bit of a look at their fixtures, they've played Palace, Leicester City and Bournemouth
last season.
But if you look at it across the whole season, they've only played Palace, Leicester and Bournemouth. They haven't played Tottenham, big teams like Man United, joke, Liverpool, City, Chelsea and Spurs, they've already faced each other, as we know. The next few games will allow them to build a little bit of momentum, however, and they've got back-to-back home games as well. So that will help them. They're up there. They're not chasing. We're going to see how that works out. But at the moment, when you look at the stats, they've actually benefited from over half their shots on target finding the net. Will that continue? Their margins aren't as big as they might have looked, okay? They aren't really creating any more chances or more shots than they did last season. It's just they've been either a little bit lucky or maybe, yes, they have been clinical. Okay, you could just say that. I think when the Europa League returns, that's going to be a big test. That's going to be a big test of their squad as well. And when they come up against the big games, I think that will be when we can start to tell. They will play Man United. Who the hell knows where Manchester United are going to be in a couple of games' time when they play Arsenal. And it'll be quite unusual seeing Arsenal, of course, above Manchester United, with United low. Will they still be in a relegation battle at that point, right down there in the bottom of the table? Again, who knows? But it's allowed Arsenal a little bit of a momentum, something they haven't had for the last few seasons, and we'll just have to see from there. I'm just sort of sitting on the fence with this one, really. But
okay, all right, we shall wrap things up there. A quick reminder, by the way, that the WSL, Women's Super League season, starts on the 10th of September. The Athletic Women's Football Podcast will be making a return, and there's so many interesting stories to cover there, not just, of course, off the back of that fantastic European Championship win for the Lionesses, but it also gives us a good excuse on that show to talk about Liverpool Women, the newcomers to the side, but also crazy bids going on for Lioness players as well. I understand that Man City have rejected another bid for Kira Walsh from Barcelona as they try and tempt away some of the Lionesses' best. It'll be such a fascinating season to keep across, of course, in the WSL and beyond. Show returns at the Athletic Women's Football Podcast. Subscribe now and then you'll grab the preview edition as soon as it lands.
Knockout takes, Almunia saves, knockout follows in, Almunia saves again! Absolutely astonishing. Now here come Watford. Forestieri. Here's Hogg! Dini! Do not scratch your eyes! You are really seeing the most extraordinary finish here!
Okay, part three of the show then. We haven't talked, have we, enough really about the EFL so far this season. And we don't want to neglect life outside the Premier League. So a good excuse for us to take a look at some of the stories, some of the storylines, I suppose, going on in the Championship, League One and League Two. And this has come at the request of a listener, hasn't it, Lindsay?
Yes, it has. And we respond to our listeners, Kate.
Depends what the listeners are asking for, by the way. Can I just footnote that in there?
That is true. Danny Goodison, though, just said, excellent as ever, which we appreciate. I'm getting that bit in. I appreciate time is tight every week, but would love an EFL segment every now and then. So that's what we're doing. We're giving the EFL segment this week for Danny and all the rest of the listeners that want to dive into EFL.
So some of the storylines surrounding EFL. One of the big ones, we were talking about watching football documentaries earlier. Anyone who watched Sunderland Till I Die will know the eternal plight of Sunderland to crawl back up through the leagues. This time they did it though. Sunderland are back in the Championship. The first time since 2017-2018 that they're going to be in the second tier of English football. Hayley, I know you would have had your eye across this one. It's been so long in the making, hasn't it, for Sunderland, this one? And I know, well, their support up in the northeast is absolutely huge, and that'll be great for the league as well, I'm sure.
It will, really good for the league, really good for the northeast. The good thing I'm enjoying is the fact that they've got this rivalry back now in the northeast with Middlesbrough. You've got Middlesbrough and Sunderland playing each other, because you'd had Sunderland and Newcastle, Middlesbrough and Newcastle. They've all been in different leagues. You've had Newcastle in the Premier League, Middlesbrough in the Championship, and Sunderland. So they've all been kept apart. So I think for the northeast, these huge games, we've got one coming up as well with Middlesbrough. And that was going to be one of my talking points, actually, focusing on some of the managers and what they're doing for clubs where, you you know, we're expecting an awful lot. Chris Wilder at Middlesbrough, they're in desperate need of promotion. They've been trying it for so many seasons over and over and over since dropping out of the Premier League, a little bit yo-yo for a while, weren't they? They've been there or thereabouts, but just never quite getting over the final hurdle. There's so much respect for Chris Wilder, but they've had an absolutely woeful start. Haven't managed to win yet. They're second from bottom. So I obviously follow Manchester United and Middlesbrough. Normally I'm like, well, if United are having a bit of a drop off, I turn my attention to Middlesbrough. But they're equally as bad at the moment. But I do think it would be great for these two North East sides to start really competing and just bring a little bit of life back into the area.
A quick aside, because it's not EFL as such, it's an EFL side, but it was actually Carabao Cup and that competition. But my word, Sheffield Wednesday scored three worldies. If you've not seen these goals, they're incredible. And there's not one of them that you wouldn't think is a contender for possibly being a goal of the season. It's ridiculous. So you've got first half goals from Jaden Brown. Take a look at that one. Then up steps for Seo Delibashiru. And then Dennis Adeiran with one from even further out. So if you haven't seen those goals, scored at Hillsborough against Rochdale in the Carabao Cup second round stage, take a look, because that's three world is in one match. And I suppose that brings me on to talent and the talent from the EFL that manages to rise through the ranks and end up in the Premier League. We've seen it with Eberiche Eze, or Eze, as I saw on the pronunciation guide that Crystal Palace put out. Honestly, there's always one that shocks you, because I've checked with him before and I'm sure he said Eze and then it was Eze. But anyway, he's been brilliant, hasn't he? Poach from QPR. I think that one of the big talents that clubs will be keeping an eye on is Elias Chair at QPR. I've talked about him. I know I've spoken to you about him before, Kate, in previous seasons, because I've covered QPR quite a few seasons when I was at Final Score and going into Soccer Saturday, actually. I haven't done them quite as much over at Sky, but certainly I did them a lot at the BBC. And he was already being talked about. He's now 24 years old and he started the season with one goal and three assists in five games. So Elias Chair is certainly one of the stars to watch, I think. And then from Reading, who had an appalling season last season. I was at the game against Borough at the weekend, where I'm afraid your Borough were beaten. Junior Hoylett, another player that I think, you know, we all in the Championship have known about his talent. Yeah. But could he make that step up? Because he's been spoken about so long. He was brilliant in that match. Fauna as well. I really liked him. He had a great finish for the goal in this game. And Reading are that surprise outfit, because they did so woefully last season. I remember going to see them and thinking this is some of the worst football I'd seen. And then to go back, they are the best home form side in the Championship. They've won three consecutive games at home under Paul Ince. And yeah, I really like what I'm seeing there. So I'm wondering if Reading are going to be the surprise team in the Championship. So those are a few thoughts from the games that I've been at the start of this season. I was also for Soccer Saturday at a League One game between Oxford and Cambridge. Very different budgets that those two teams have, but I was equally impressed by both of them. I mean, Oxford were superior on the day, but I liked what Cambridge came with. I thought that they had a lot of hunger, a lot of fight and grit to their performance. So let's see if Oxford, with all the backing that they have, can manage under Carl Robinson to get promoted. It'd be great to see them, wouldn't it, in the Championship. Those are my thoughts on the early rounds of EFL.
I've been talent spotting as well in the Championship, actually, looking at those young Premier League players who go and mop up experience in the lower leagues. And there's some really interesting prospects here, which I'm sure fans will want to keep their eye across. In fact, both of these players worth a mention, first of all, because they were part of that England under 19 European Championship winning side earlier in the summer. We forget it wasn't just the women and the Lionesses who dominated the Euros. The under 19 men did as well. Brooke Norton-Cuffey, someone Arsenal fans will know well. He's on loan at Championship side Rotherham now. Offers an attacking outlet on the right hand side. He's a right back. He was on loan actually at second half of last season with League One side Lincoln. And I know he was a firm favourite there, caught the eye of many fans. And that'll be a really good signing for Rotherham there. Already has experience of the lower leagues, comes from Arsenal. And Callum Doyle from Manchester City. The defenders joined Coventry City on loan. The reason why he's worth a mention is that the 18-year-old, these are still so young, these players, but he had an amazing season last season, because Sunderland fans will know Callum Doyle very well. He was one of the players responsible for helping them win promotion out of League One. featured 44 times and a bit of a hero, came on as a substitute in their playoff final over Wickham. So yeah, Callum Doyle helped Sunderland last season, is going to be playing against their opposition, Coventry City, this season. We should also mention a bit of League One and League Two, shouldn't we? All those big sides, fallen giants is how they're best described, really, aren't they? In League One, the likes of Ipswich, Portsmouth, Sheffield Wednesday, Charlton, Bolton, Derby County, you know, all of these sides we've seen up and down the leagues. Well, certainly up in the Premier League for a decent amount of time. And then they've fallen out of favour a little bit. And maybe it's the year that Ipswich finally get promoted. It's their fourth season in League One. They're now under the management of former Man United coach Kieran McKenna. Won 4 out of 5 to start the season. Could this be Ipswich's season, maybe?
This is going to be my point, actually. The big names or the players that are trying to make their name in management that are currently managing lower in the league, and the types of players that they can attract, maybe not long-term signings, but short-term loans. So you're getting a much higher quality of player coming from Premier League clubs dropping down into the Championship, Championship players able to play in League One and League Two, and actually Scottish Premiership players as well, because you've got Scott Brown in his first management role at Fleetwood Town. They previously had Joey Barton, so they kind of want to come up with the big names, the characters there too. You've got Mark Hughes in charge of Bradford and, you know, all that he did with Manchester City and achieved in his career. For those that, you know, are looking for a manager that they can't say no to, if Mark Hughes wants you to come on loan to Bradford City, well, hell yeah, you're going to say yes, aren't you? A bit like Company in charge of Burnley. I know that's the Championship, but just strengthening the league by a lot of these talented players who want to come down, play for a big name, be around a big name, learn from these, you know, hugely talented players who've won so much in their careers to show off a little, to then make their way back to their club to show that they can cut it lower down the league. So I think all these managers, I mean, I would mention Chris Wilder, but maybe not with how he started at Middlesbrough, showing these lower league clubs as well that you can take a little bit of a chance and you can take risks. You've then got Rob Edwards, haven't you? The other way, a lesser named manager, a lesser known manager, but did wonderful things at Forest Green Rovers and then fell out with the chairman spectacularly after being offered the chance to go to Watford. Of course he's not going to turn that down. They're actually undefeated in 5 so far, aren't they? So he's made the step up and others have made the step down. So there's a really good mix of managers around at the moment.
So we will stick to our pledge. Every now and again, we will dip in and out of the EFL for you and bring you some of the most exciting storylines from the lower leagues. Let's get on to a bit of any other business then. I'll kick us off, actually, as we've had a bit of a chat about Ipswich already and whether this is finally their season in terms of promotion. Ed Sheeran's been at it with the kit designing again. He's designed a new blackout third kit. Now, I hope this is not a prediction of what's going to happen to our domestic energy supply this winter. Apparently, it's not. Apparently, it's basically versions of the cover of his Equals album released last year. Now, although I have been to see Ed in concert, I'll admit I haven't got a copy of this album, so I can't verify that. But it's an all-black shirt. It looks cool. And actually, Sheeran was saying he's sort of, you know, cottoning on to the onto international exposure, I suppose, and the importance of marketing and how you look and how your kit should be marketable abroad. And he said that he wanted to design a bit of kit, a cool bit of clothing that around the world people would want to wear. So there you go. Not just a utility piece, but also looks good. That's Ed Sheeran's third kit. It's called the Blackout Kit for Ipswich Town. Look it up. Let us know what you think. Lindsay.
We're going to dip back into EFL again. Wow, we haven't done it for a couple of weeks and now I'm going back in. I love this story from QPR at the weekend. They took swabs from all of their fans to try and find a bone marrow donor for a young lad called Daniel. And I just think that they are a club that really do community so well. They renamed their stadium, didn't they, once upon a time to the Kian Prince Foundation Stadium. They've only just gone back to Loftus Road code. They had that for quite a few seasons in place. I just think, you know, whether you're a club based up north or maybe you another London club and on the pitch you're not so keen on QPR, I don't think that you can not like what they do off the pitch. I think their work is brilliant in the community. And yeah, hopefully they might have even found the donor to match Daniel's bone marrow. That would be an amazing story to come out if it did.
Yeah,
brilliant.
This is one of my favourite stories at the moment. There's an account called Footy Scran. If you don't follow them, you can join the 440,000 people who do. And it started up because, well, it follows different foods, of course, that you can eat at different stadiums, and they kind of rank the pies and the chips and look at the prices and cost and stuff. There's a ninth tier side. This is Reading City FC. So not what you can get at the Medeski. Somebody tweeted as a prank this box with a little plate of Chinese food in the corner, in the other corner some chips, some lovely looking chicken nuggets, and then what looks like kind of crispy fried calamari with a little smattering of chili on there and some spring onion as well, a little bit of sweet sauce. It looks absolutely high quality. It was a bit of a random box of Chinese food, but something that you wouldn't turn your nose up at and something you certainly wouldn't be expecting at a football club. Within a few days, the guy that had tweeted the picture, it had gone basically viral. But the problem was, this wasn't actually food that you could buy at Reading City FC. It was just a bit of a prank. However, the treasurer at Reading City, a woman, Vicky Pike, said, because the likes went up to almost 5,000 in a couple of hours, I said to the chairman, actually, we need to jump on this. Because if we don't, then somebody else will. So before long, the club actually started selling Thai red curries, noodles, spring onion, pak choi and chicken balls, all served in a pizza box at a price of £10. And for everyone bought, they actually made £4 profit, more than anything else at the football club.
Wow.
And they've done really well for it. The chairman said, you know, a lot of people hadn't heard of Reading City before this happened. None of this would have happened but for my mate Barney, who basically tweeted it as a joke. There was one gentleman from Cornwall who wasn't sure whether to come and watch or go to Hungerford. He picked us because of the food. So there you go. So go and follow Footy Scran. It's great.
Yes. I was just having a little look at some of the pictures and some of this stuff. I mean, Bolton seem to be doing amazingly well with their sort of Bolty themed dishes this season. It looks delicious. They've also got a hot dog from Blythe Spartans on the other end of the scale, which is basically three halved, those sort of Frankfurter fake sausages, I call them, although they're not like the kind of rubbery sausages. Three of them sliced up in a burger bun, not in a hot dog bun, looking very sorry for itself. But yeah, I mean, look, if you want to see how good football food can be, many of you will know about it already, but yeah, Football Scran. A big thumbs up from me.
A mac and cheese pie.
Yeah, a mac and cheese pie. I saw that as well. I mean, that is my kind of food.
I'm not sure that anything can rival when we all get together, though, ladies, and the mac and cheese that we've had before at the Soho group.
No, in the little brass pot.
We need to do a bit of a meetup. We absolutely promised, didn't we, that we'd do an end of season, early season meetup, and we haven't done it yet, so we must do because of the early start to the season. Just a big shout out for me. I'm sure most of our listeners know about this already, but well done to Crawley Town, who are struggling in League Two so badly at the moment. They're 23rd in League Two, but fair play to them for knocking Premier League newcomers Fulham out of the Carabao Cup on Tuesday night. Worth a mention because they're at 84.
I thought you were congratulating them on doing poorly to begin with. Well done at Crawley for really struggling this season.
84 league positions between Fulham and Crawley. Just one of those, you know, one of those League Cup stories that we're here for. I do want to give a quick plug as well for the Offside Rule website. We've got some brilliant young football writers, female football writers at the moment, who are undergoing a mentorship with us, courtesy of Twitter. And they've been outputting some really excellent content. They did great during the Euros. And now that we're into the regular season, there's more from them as well. There's a really good reflective piece, actually, from Rachel Roberts, who we've sort of talked about how women's football has had an uplift after the Lionesses' success this summer. But it's also meant that older women in the game as well are experiencing uptake in their football sessions. And there's a piece that Rachel's written with Crawley Old Girls I want to say old girls, I mean like kind of 40 plus. I don't think anyone's 80 odd, oh, as far as I can make out. Remember, these are the women that were subjected to a 50-year ban for anything near an official game of women's football. And there's some wonderful stories there and some wonderful quotes about making sure that there's space for women of all generations to enjoy this newfound zest for women's football. So well done to Rachel Roberts. That's up on our website, offsiderulepodcast.com.
Whilst we're on the topic of women's football, we mentioned Jill Scott and her retirement earlier. I know, Kate, that in 2019, after the World Cup, you sat down with her for an Offside Rule exclusive. We love these shows where we get such a lovely amount of time, near on an hour sometimes, with players just to go through their careers, what motivates them, loads of bits that you covered with her. So if anyone's interested in the life and times of Jill up until 2019, obviously something huge and mammoth has happened since. but you can get the full downloaded version. Just go into the thread on the Offside Rule podcast and find the Jill Scott Offside Rule exclusive.
It's such an interesting contrast, because she talks about her mental health and her struggle to recover after the failure and the expectation at 2019. And when you think where the players are now, that's been such an important jump for her and many of the other Lionesses as well. And look, we've got to bring things to a close. Thank you so much for your feedback about the show. Do keep getting in touch. We do read your messages. We do take note, I promise. If you want to let us know what you're liking or not liking, head to @OffsideRulePod on Twitter and on Instagram. Hayley and Lindsay, are you two reunited for a studio session at Sky Sports? Well, Thursday, is it happens?
Well, yeah, we've got one tomorrow, but I'm not in, am I, Hayley? I'm in Manchester.
You're not in person, but it will be special, won't it?
You can catch Hayley and Lindsay then. I'm sure, Hayley, you'll be regularly in the Sky studios as well. We're back again next week, aren't we, ladies?
Yes. Can't wait.
Heck yes.
For now then, signing out. Until next time. See you later.
You've been listening to The Offside Rule, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything offside at offsiderulepodcast.com and by following @OffsideRulePod on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app.
The Athletic.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.